When you look at life on this planet, our purpose is to propagate our species. When you feel like your body can't do the only thing that it was designed to do, those feelings of inadequacy and failure run really, really deep.
The infertility journey felt like a version of a death all the time, constantly, that never ended.
And we have a name for that. It's called cumulative grief. And it's just every time you get your period, every time you see someone pregnant out in the world, it's grief, 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 grief layered on top.
What would you say is unique for couples going through IVF in particular?
I think just how scientific a process that is supposed to be very primal and emotion-based becomes. I remember for one of our transfers that my husband had a potential work meeting. And I was like, well, do you think you can like pencil in our conception? How can you inject romance, connection, sexiness back into your relationship?
If your heart aches for a baby, whether you want a baby someday or you've already been on the journey and it hasn't been as easy as you had hoped, I want you to know that you don't have to do it alone. I created Womanhood Wellness for women just like you. Inside of this amazing membership, you have step-by-step doctor-designed blueprints unique to your womanhood type based on the season that you're in. You have access to order your own labs. You have over 22 amazing courses and growing that I have created for you, all about breaking up with birth control, balancing your hormones, preparing your body for pregnancy, optimizing your fertility, and navigating the root causes of infertility. I have support for pregnancy loss, for navigating integrative IVF, for supporting your partner throughout this process, as well as information about libido, which is one of my favorite things to teach about, because when it comes to womanhood, it's all connected. On top of the amazing content and resources, such as being able to order your own supplements and the protocols that I have, all of the step-by-step checklists of exactly what to do within each lesson in a basic, intermediate, and advanced path, I also have amazing support inside of the membership. Every month you get a live Q&A with me. I have monthly masterclasses taught by me and other amazing practitioners. And bi-weekly, we have connection calls where you get to really connect with women and share and feel seen. We have seasonal circles that are unique to the different seasons of womanhood. For example, if you are breaking up with birth control, or you're struggling with libido, or you are trying to conceive, maybe you're going through IVF, or you've had a pregnancy loss. All of these different scenarios require different support. And so these circles put you together with women just like you so that you can really connect and make long-lasting friendships. You'll finally understand your cycle, your labs, your body, your fertility, and you'll feel empowered in your womanhood journey. So if this sounds exciting to you, I encourage you to go to womanhoodwellness.com and use code podcast to sign up and save 20% on your first month. Again, head to womanhoodwellness.com and use code podcast to save 20%. I can't wait to see you inside. Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I'm your co-host, Dr. Leah Gordon, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Morgan and I share the natural women's health and motherhood guidance you've been looking for from a fresh, functional, and balanced lens. Today, I had the privilege of interviewing Dr. Andrea. She is a reproductive psychologist and an IVF mama who supports women and couples along their trying to conceive journey around pregnancy loss, infertility, and pregnancy and postpartum struggles. She actually made me tear up multiple times during this interview because I myself have been through infertility, if you don't know. And it just really speaks to that depth of what people are going through when they're on the journey of trying to become a mother or a parent. And she really gives amazing advice on what to do to navigate and have awareness, and also how to keep your relationship strong. And there's just so much amazing good wisdom. So I'm really excited to introduce Dr. Andrea to you, and let's get started. Dr. Andrea, thank you so much for being here as a guest on the Healthy as a Mother podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be talking to you.
So I know I introduced you a little bit, but why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, like what you do professionally, and then also your story, because I know that you have a really powerful story as well. So just share a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely. So I'm here kind of in my capacity as a licensed clinical psychologist. I am a reproductive psychologist. So I specialize in the kind of mental health that surrounds the trying to get pregnant, being pregnant, and postpartum process. And I kind of specialize in the trying to get pregnant and struggling to get pregnant population, because that is what my story was personally, that I have now been on the other side of for a little while. My son is about to turn 11 months old, so it has a happy ending. But yes, I had a full, almost four-year-long, twisty, windy fertility road that ultimately culminated in IVF, which, you know, was never my plan and never what I envisioned for myself. But basically, my husband and I got married right before COVID. We were very lucky that we were not impacted by that. And then decided to kind of do what a lot of people I know do, which is wait a year, you know, have your first year of marriage and then, you know, pull the goalie, see what happens. And just, you know, wasn't happening. I suspected there was some stuff going on my end. I've never had super regular cycles. I have some autoimmune stuff in my history. So we start looking into it. I started working with an acupuncturist. I wanted to start with kind of like non-invasive, like, you know, let's start small and can avoid going big. And she was super helpful. And she really thought that I had PCOS based on the temperature charting that she had me do. So she referred me to a fertility clinic that she was comfortable working with. I did no research. I didn't research them myself. I was like, oh, sure. Like, we'll just get some blood tests done and figure out what's going on and fix it. And it'll, you know, next month will be our month, of course. I think when you're trying to get pregnant. Anyway, I start doing all this testing. Turns out I have PCOS. My androgens are all out of whack. You know, just I'd started gaining weight, all the PCOS symptoms and things. So we started doing medicated cycles, timed intercourse, IUIs, nothing. At this point, we're a couple years into the process. My friends are starting to get pregnant around me. I'm starting to feel the pressure a little bit. And we moved to IVF. I did... Let's see, my first round of IVF seemed so successful. I got 24 eggs. We thought we were sitting pretty, right? I mean, I did have ovarian hyperstimulation. Terrible.
Yeah, I was going to say PCOS, that makes sense.
You know, and for the most part, a little bit of PCOS, but we thought it was just an ovulation timing issue. So, you know, this should, you know, maybe IUI wasn't working because my eggs are a little harder on their shell and doing the, you know, the injection with the ICSI, the sperm is going to be great for it. And, you know, this will fix it. So we got 24 eggs, the attrition rate, we had 6 embryos that we sent off to testing. I'm like, we're done. Like, this is our fix. Well, they came back and only one was genetically normal, which was really unusual at, what was I at the time, 32. 30, yes, 32 years old. Really unusual. So they start talking to me about egg quality issues and we kind of, I tweak some supplements, I'm doing stuff. We do another round. They say, if you want a chance at a, you know, a live birth, let alone siblings, we really should do another retrieval. We do another retrieval. I get 12 eggs that time. That's okay, because they said they were going for quality over quantity. We got no viable embryos that time.
Oh, my goodness.
Really disappointing. Meanwhile, like, some of my lab work had looked a little bit off, but you know how sometimes in Western medicine they say, oh, it's normal, but, you know, it's not optimal, or, you know, there's just some things that were off. So I started working with a functional doctor in the meantime and asking my fertility clinic, you know, well, can't I do something about my egg quality? And they're like, no, we don't believe, like, basically, we don't believe that you can do anything about your egg quality. So we moved forward with a transfer with my one embryo, and it didn't take. So we were just back to the drawing board. And I was told by that clinic that I needed an egg donor, that, you know, after only 2 egg retrievals with wildly different results, that was their solution to my problem, that it was an egg quality issue. Egg quality can't be fixed. And at 32 years old, you're not going to be a biological parent. Ugh. And that was devastating. But I'd been working with the functional doctor a little bit, and we'd started to see some real movement. My inflammation markers went down like tenfold. I had a diagnosis of lupus. And since doing all some gut reset stuff, some diet stuff, some supplement stuff, I no longer have a positive ANA in my blood work.
That's amazing.
That's unheard of.
Yeah. So good.
Like, I just can't believe. And oh, and we figured out that I had insulin resistance. They put me on metformin after my egg retrievals. Like, what? So, I'm getting way into the weeds here because I know you know the medicine.
No, I love it. I love the details. This is great.
But yeah, so just like really, really upsetting news. And my husband had been begging me to get a second opinion for a while, but this is where kind of the mental health comes into it. This was probably the lowest I had been in my life, just mentally and emotionally. And the idea of just the logistics and the work involved to start somewhere else. And what if they tell me that what we've been doing isn't what we should have been doing, and we've been wasting our time and our money and our insurance benefits and all this. And I just like mentally couldn't wrap my head around it until we were truly back to that square one period. And so luckily we moved to a clinic that is, I think, better known for success, but also complicated cases where it's not just a, oh, you're unexplained, we'll just do our little science behind the scenes and get you pregnant. Like when there's more you need to investigate. So luckily the functional doctor flagged that I needed, that I had hyperparathyroidism, that I needed to get that a nodule removed from my parathyroid, and that causes miscarriage if not addressed ahead of time. No one else caught it. We caught that. We did some stuff. The new clinic changed my protocol. We got 15 eggs, 3 healthy embryos. One of them is my son. 2 are in the freezer. We're hopeful that one of those will be a sibling. And yeah, so certainly, you know, just the whole process and being told parent and being told that there's nothing you can do and watching your entire social circle, you know, just move on without you. And in a lot of cases, super easily or even accidentally.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Know all about that.
So alongside that, I was a clinical psychologist that whole time doing therapy with people, but obviously was like, well, this is a whole side of things that I could specialize in. And realized that while I was going through it, my therapist, who I love, doesn't have lived experience with this. So I was spending a lot of our therapy sessions kind of having to explain things and saying, okay, well, my AMH was this, okay, and that means this, and that indicates that, like, when you work with someone who's been through it, they just know. That's kind of my superpower now, is working with people who are going through this, where not only do I get it on an emotional level, but I speak the language of it. And you don't need to be doing any more emotional work than you were already doing when you're trying to grow your family.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. What a beautiful story. And I'm so happy that you've come out and you've had a happy ending. I know that we also have had a similar experience in that regard, but the journey of getting there is so hard. And when you're in it and you're in the thick of it, that emotional piece, I think, is so missing for people. And like you said, there's very few people who can speak that language. And there's a different level of understanding that comes from that lived experience. You know, I feel like there are nuances, as there are with anything that people haven't lived or had that experience, that you just don't understand. And there's almost a red flag for people who have been in it or are in it. For people who haven't, it's just so obvious, you know, when they just don't quite get it. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's not like you have to have had cancer to help people with cancer and these kind of things, but there is a different level of support, I think, that comes when a practitioner has had that journey, but is also trained professionally to not have that like counter transference of like, I'm going to put all my stuff on you and like, it's surely this problem because it was my problem. And being able to have that lived experience, but also be able to hold the space for that person's unique experience, I think, is so beautiful.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yay. I'm so glad that you do what you do in the world. So was your husband ever a part of the factor? Like, did he ever have any fertility issues?
Oh, this was so infuriating to me. So no, is my short answer. And I was suspicious that that was what was going on with us. Because if you, and I don't think he'll judge me for saying this, if you looked at us side by side, I'm the healthy one and he's not. Like, he's a bigger guy. Like, he's not as into athletic stuff. Like, you know. So I'm thinking, okay, like, it's probably a sperm issue and he needs to work on his lifestyle. And this is going to be great because if it's affecting his masculinity, this will be motivating for him. I haven't been able to motivate him, so this will motivate him. He goes and gets a very intense sperm analysis. Like, amazing. Apparently, numbers off the charts, that his doctor joked with him that if they gave away plaques for fantastic sperm, he would get a plaque.
Wow. That's so shocking to me. And did they do a DNA fragmentation as well? Do you know?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
Fantastic sperm. Now, granted, like, he doesn't have any real vices. Like, he doesn't smoke. He doesn't drink. He doesn't hot tub. But I was just shocked by that. And the emotional ramifications of really feeling the weight on my shoulders of, like, this is, it's my fault. It's my body that's not doing this. Now, he was great about it. He never made me feel that way. But, you know, that's what my brain is telling me.
Yeah. Oh, it's so hard. And I, you know, who knows, because I'm not run with another partner trying to get pregnant. But, you know, obviously my husband's infertility was very obviously a big problem. But who knows if there was a piece, you know, with me, I always had normal cycles. Yes, I had polyps and fibroids and stuff, but I never felt that pressure of being like, this is me. But there were honestly times around my emotional journey that, not that I wished that it was, but it brought a complexity to our relationship that it wasn't me and that it was him, and that, you know, I couldn't really bring up that emotional side initially without triggering him or making him feel really bad or really sad or like less than a man. And that was tricky, because if I felt like it was me, I could sit and cry on his shoulder and, you know, he would hold me and be like, it's okay. But if I did that with him, he just would shut down because he felt so bad.
Yes.
And I'm sure you've seen that in practice too.
Absolutely. Because unfortunately, just the way it works, and hey, maybe years from now we'll have better technology, I don't know, but it's just, it's the woman's body who bears the brunt of the whole process, whether it happens spontaneously or through, you know, assistance. And I think I did feel like at least it's me carrying it because it's my fault. And I had thought about, what if the tables were turned and I was kind of, you know, would I feel like I had to do this for him? And would there be a resentment? And how would that emotional support look? It's complicated. I have a friend who was in a similar situation to you guys. And we talked a lot about that. And luckily, she's just a gem of a human. She's like, if this is what we have to do to get a family, this is what we do. We're a team. I was like, okay, well, you just be the poster child for this.
Yeah, totally. Totally. So for your clients and patients, or I'm not sure what you call them, but the people that you support, what would you say are some of the biggest things that they're struggling with from the mental health standpoint?
Yeah. So for a lot of people, and a lot of people I see, I call them, when they're coming to me for support, they're people who are really high functioning, high achieving, get shit done type people. And this is kind of the first time in their life that they've come across something that they can't muscle their way through, that they can't, no matter, you know, they do all the tracking, all the supplements, all the yoga, all the sauna, all of this, and it's still not happening for them. Sometimes it's the first time in their life that they're experiencing that. And so that, just on an identity level of feeling like, wait, I see myself as an achiever and someone who gets stuff done, and now this isn't happening. There can be this internal conflict on an identity level that's complicated. I think it also goes to our biology. I think there is, you know, when you look at life on this planet, our purpose is to propagate our species. Like, that is, and it's intrinsically driven into all of us to some degree, you know, save for socialization and whatnot. When you feel like your body can't do the only thing that it was designed to do, that those feelings of inadequacy and failure run really, really deep. I remember having unhinged feelings such as, like, well, clearly, like, I'm a lemon of a human and I don't deserve to pass on my genetics. Like, I'm a failure of a person. My line ends here. Or my husband and I aren't compatible. Like, our DNA is not compatible together, and we shouldn't have gotten married.
It makes me want to cry, because that's bringing up a lot of the stuff that I've felt. Like, I've done so much work, I've seen so many people, but it does hit so deep, because those are like these deep things that people experience, and they're not just like, oh, I'm stressed or I don't feel good. It's like it goes to the core of, like, our soul.
Oh, and then what people don't realize, and we could talk for hours about, you know, how it can be tricky to support someone going through this because people say the wrong things all the time. But what people don't realize is it it encompasses every aspect of your life. When you're trying to get pregnant and you're not pregnant, you see babies and pregnant people everywhere. You notice it, like you'll be watching an old movie that you used to love and you'll have forgotten that there was a pregnancy storyline in it. And you're like, oh, thanks for that today. You'll think about it when you're deciding what to eat. You're at the grocery store. Oh, well, this one's a little bit more natural and I'm trying to like improve my egg quality, so I guess I'll pay more money for this one. Or your friends are saying, hey, this summer we should get a lake house. Oh, I don't know what my life will look like this summer. And the timing, like, should I drink this? Should I eat this? Should I go here? Oh, I want to wear that new trend. Oh, I'm so bloated from my fertility treatments. Like, feel confident. It's just, it permeates every aspect of your day-to-day life, your identity, your relationship. And depending on your support systems and how they are, whether they're giving you support, whether they're going through their own family building process, like it can just be screaming at you from every angle, and not enough people talk about it.
I know. It's crazy. I feel like for me, the identity shift thing that you mentioned, it was really trippy because not only did we have the complexity of it mostly being male factor, but then also I also felt broken in a way, all of that incompatibility stuff. And my husband and I had also struggled with a lot of low libido and painful sex, which was a whole other complicated thing for another time. And so there were a lot of questions for me of like, am I not supposed to be with him? Is this God's way of telling me that we're not supposed to have kids together? Like, this is making me question everything about my life, everything about us as beings, everything about our purpose on this planet. But then also I was a naturopathic doctor. And it's like, I felt like such a failure that I couldn't figure it out, that we couldn't get pregnant naturally. You know, there was so much complexity. And part of why our infertility journey was so long was because it took me so long to process all of that, to get to the place where I was even in a place of acceptance to even consider the path of IVF, you know, even though we didn't know it would work. And so I'm sure many people listening who are on that journey feel similarly, that it's like no one wakes up one day. I mean, maybe some people do. And they're like, oh, yeah, I'll just, you know, do IVF if I can't get pregnant in 1 month. You know, it's like that is typically not the path most people go down. It's long. It's complicated. There's all these different things. And depending on how much your identity is rooted in this ability, for me, it was rooted in my ability to be a mother, but also in my ability to be a doctor who could figure it out. It broke everything open and like, you know, made me examine all the darkest places of myself.
Absolutely. I remember in one of the hardest parts of my journey, I had a client at the time. I love all my clients, but love this client. And he was newly married, and it was a COVID situation. So they gotten legally married, and then they had to wait however long to do their big party. And they ended up conceiving the weekend of their big party, of their celebration. And it really was nice hearing this from a man too. He's telling me that he just feels like this is God smiling on their union and this confirmation. And like, it's a beautiful way of thinking about it. And I'm, you know, using all of my best therapist skills to not let him know that he is killing me with those words. Like, and just the questioning everything. And I can't imagine being in the medicine field and dealing with this. Insane and just knowing that this wasn't the path you wanted to do. I mean, I know how I feel as a psychologist when I have mental health struggles. I'm like, I think I have the toolbook. Like, why am I just totally inept at my, so, okay, I'm inept at biology and I'm inept at my job.
Yeah, totally. That's exactly how I felt. But, you know, I know everyone finds meaning in this, and this might be part of your therapy, or it might just be conclusions people come to, or, you know, a spiritual path that people go down. But for me, after all the therapy and all of the things that I did, what really has made me feel better is that maybe it wasn't that the path for us wasn't to have kids easily, and that the challenge makes it so that that wasn't what was meant for us, but that the challenge was the purpose and the point for whatever growth. You know, my husband and I are very different people now than we were before. And we were talking about that last night, actually, about how proud I am of us and who we are with our kids and who we are as just people in our businesses and in our life. And so much of that wouldn't have been the case if our journey was so easy and we just, you know, met up and got pregnant and like did that. It would just, because it doesn't make you go into these dark places. But the thing is, if people don't have good support, to go into those places, or they ignore it or they stuff it, I feel like there can be a lot of issues. Do you see a lot of relationship struggles with people who are on the trying to conceive journey?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that?
And I mean relationship in every sense of the word. Obviously, the romantic relationship and partnership, absolutely, but also the friendships and the family relationships. This process puts strain on all of them. Obviously, primarily romantic partnership. I mean, some of what we've already kind of touched on, that, you know, feeling responsible or guilty, or even in some cases, blaming and finger pointing, I have seen. And that, you know, that sucks. And it sucks that it's so one-sided, the process, especially, and I'm mostly talking about IVF here, where, you know, you're going in for constant lab draws and monitoring and all the shots and everything. It's just only one partner can do it. Like, my husband, if I could do it for you, I would, but I can't. So
I know. My husband said the same thing.
Yeah. Resentment in that case. Some partners do feel differently about it. I think you'd probably heard kind of the old mama adage, or whatever we call it, that women become mothers when they get pregnant and men become fathers when the baby's born. Like, they have that connection immediately to the process. And so I've seen it, and I hate to gender stereotype, but it really does fall on these gender lines, that a lot of time men are not as invested or as emotionally, like, disturbed by the process, because they're like, you know, we'll just do this and, you know, we'll get to the same endpoint. And for a lot of women, it's a much more difficult process. In that case, I think to the sexual component, you mentioned that, because a lot of people don't come to IVF until they've been trying for a very long time, because, you know, we don't always know there's something wrong until it's not happening for us. So at a certain point, sex usually becomes this scheduled mandatory thing. You know, you start getting mad at sex. Like, sex is supposed to be this fun thing that brings new life into the world. And it's this thing that it's like, okay, hurry up. I'm like, oh, I'm on the moon. And where's that?
Yep. I know. It's so hard. Did you know proper hydration and mineral balance are key for hormone health, fertility, and preparing for pregnancy? This is why Dr. Morgan and I love Relight by Redmond's, the real salt people. A USA-made electrolyte powder with unrefined sea salt, over 60 trace minerals, plus bioavailable forms of potassium, calcium, and two forms of magnesium, malate and glycinate. These minerals support hormones, hydration, energy, and overall health. The best part is they taste delicious. I'm really picky about how things taste, and so you can rest assured this is Dr. Leah approved. I love lemon lime, but I know Dr. Morgan is a strawberry lemonade gal. Head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off your order of electrolytes, real sea salt, natural toothpaste, and so much more. Again, head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%. Happy hydrating on your womanhood and fertility journey. What advice, like, I know there's a lot to unpack there, but just if there's something that you could share with couples who are going through the trying to conceive journey to support them, or what they should be doing, or not even should, but just could, or just anything to say to a couple if they're listening, trying to conceive and struggling, what would you say?
So on a basic level, that's something that I think everyone can do is two things. There needs to be a regular check-in on the fertility process, a place where you guys come together on purpose. You know it's coming. It's planned. You can think about it ahead of time to say, like, hey, where are you with stuff? How's it feeling? Check-in. And honesty is allowed. If it's, hey, it hasn't really been on my mind this week, I've been busy with other things, cool. If it's, hey, it's getting really hard, I saw three different pregnancy announcements on Instagram this week and I'm losing my mind, you know, you need that space to talk about it. And I think a lot of couples, the reason I recommend that is you're already so stressed by the process. You don't want to stress each other out more sometimes when you need additional support. So if you have built-in time to check in with each other, that can be really helpful for that. But same token, the other thing I recommend is having some dedicated time, maybe weekly, bi-weekly at some point, where fertility is just not on the menu to talk about.
Yeah, I love that.
Fertility free Fridays or something like that, where you go to dinner, you go bowling, you go do something where you're just, you know, even if you think about it for a second, it's going to cross your mind, but that's just not, you know, like, gaslight yourself and having a good time if you need to.
Yeah, totally. I love that, because you have to continue to foster that relationship outside of it. Otherwise, it becomes, your foundation is built on sadness and struggle and disappointment, and there's nothing left to fight for, right? Like, you have to have the thing still flourishing that you're fighting for, this relationship and this family that you're trying to build. I know that my husband and I went through that iteration multiple times, you know. That's great advice. I love that. The other thing that I feel like people have a really hard time with is the people outside of the trying to conceive journey. What are kind of some of the worst things that women or couples come to you and say, I hate it when people say this, or this is kind of the worst thing that you could tell someone on the trying to conceive journey? And then I will be asking on the flip side, what is the best thing to say? Because I think people, infertility is really hard. I feel like when people die, people still don't really know how to like approach grief very well in our culture, but it feels more acceptable, or there's just more of an understanding. It's kind of a universal experience, you know, when people have a loss in that way. But the infertility journey, at least in my experience, it felt like a version of a death all the time, constantly, that never ended, and no one understood and didn't know how to say or support me in the right way. And it's complicated. So like, what would you say to that?
Yes. I mean, to that point, and we have a name for that. It's called cumulative grief. And it's just every time you get your period, every time the scan comes back negative, every time you see someone pregnant out in the world, it's grief, 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 grief layered on top of each other. And what people outside of this journey don't understand sometimes is that you can grieve something you haven't had. They think because you didn't have it and lose it. And this counts for miscarriage too, because there's kind of a, you know, if it was early on, you didn't really have it yet, so you shouldn't be sad kind of thing. People have a really hard time imagining that. And it's also like the future that you're imagining when you're thinking, you know, you go from thinking, oh, someday we'll take our kids here, to, oh, we might not have kids. That's terrible. So people, they don't get it. And some of the worst things I hear people say, anything that starts with just, or anything that starts with at least. That's just as a blanket rule.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
Do not start your sentence with just, or at least. Just relax. Just adopt. Just do this.
Go on vacation.
Or, well, at least you know you can get pregnant, you know, after a loss. Or at least you already have one child if you're struggling to have a second. It doesn't work. And then humor about it, in a way, if they're not introducing humor first. I say that because someone very well-meaning to me, when we'd been struggling for a little while, and we didn't know the extent of our struggles at this point, but it had been long enough that people were like, hey, like, what's going on? And this family member said to me, well, are you sure you're doing it right?
Oh, gosh. Don't you want to just slap them? I know.
I want to throw hands, like, you know, it's, you know, that kind of, it's not funny. And someone who's struggling, like, especially in the age of the internet, no one who wants to be pregnant who isn't hasn't scoured the internet for ideas. So we're like, oh, just get drunk. That's what happened for my Aunt Sally. Like, not helpful. I think if people can just understand that it just sucks. That's all you have to say sometimes. And, you know, to the next part of your question, what can you say? Like, oh, that sucks. Here for you. And asking questions is helpful instead of making assumptions. I think a lot of people make assumptions about people's like faith and spirituality. Things like, oh, it all in God's timing. Like, if you're not into that thought pattern, that's not helpful necessarily. You know, those kinds of assumptions, or assuming, you know, some people, if they can't conceive spontaneously, they're not going to move on to assisted methods. So assuming, oh, well, you can just do this, or, oh, well, technology, this, and no, and like, so don't assume, just asking, where are you in the process? What do you need? Are you wanting to talk about it? Are you not wanting to talk about it? And educating yourself. I think it's so powerful when someone says, hey, I was looking up male factor infertility, and I learned XYZ, like, to make you not have to be the one to do that emotional labor to explain it to them. You know, when people ask me, okay, so IVF, so like, what does that mean? And da 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 da. You, especially now with ChatGPT or something, just plug it in. Like, you can.
Yeah, when you say ask questions, don't ask questions maybe about the process. Ask questions about them and what they need and what they're going through, versus tell me the nitty gritty details about how ICSI works. Yeah, I love that. Gosh, that's such good advice. And I love having that don't ask the just, or the at least. I think that's a really good thing in people's minds, because even I kind of panic if someone has experienced a loss, like a death, it's so normal for us to say, I'm so sorry, you know, and they say not to say that because it's like, you didn't do anything wrong. And then they're like, well, they're trying to make you feel better. And it's like, well, it's okay. And, you know, it starts this whole process. And even I catch myself in that regard where I'm like, I mean, what do I say, you know? And so I think, you know, that coming back to the question of like, that sucks. I'm so like, of course I'm saying I'm so sorry. Like, that sucks. Like, what do you need? Like, how can I support you?
Yeah. And I'm sorry to hear that, I think is good.
Yeah, that's a good thing to say.
I think too, and this is my devil's advocate moment. Oftentimes, we know that intention and impact are two different things, and someone can mean well and still be hurtful. And yes, there needs to be accountability for the impact, but it can be a really difficult journey if you decide to go at every single person who needs a poor impact when clearly their intention was good. So I think there's kind of a skill, unfortunately, in this process, and the longer the journey, the more you'll be doing this, where you kind of learn to bite your tongue or just, you know that they meant well, not get too bothered. But I think for people who are in your life that you're going to be interacting with pretty regularly, like, it's okay to say, hey, I really actually don't want to talk about the details, or I appreciate that you keep track of when I have appointments, but I really don't want to always tell you what happens with them.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's so good.
Did you know that while 97% of women take a prenatal vitamin, over 95% are still deficient? That's why I love recommending Needed's prenatal. Unlike most prenatals, Needed doses nutrients in the right forms and amounts that go above and beyond to really support both mama and baby. I actually worked with Needed for years. We spent over 3 years researching, working with practitioners, and really intentionally choosing every single nutrient form and dosage that's put into the prenatal. And now we have the data to back it up. In an IRB study, they found that the women who took the Needed prenatal had higher blood levels of key nutrients like vitamin B6, vitamin D, vitamin B12, riboflavin, vitamin K2, and selenium, compared to women who are taking a regular prenatal. Even more powerful, only the Needed group had significant amounts of vitamin D in their system, which is essential for supporting the immune system, bone development, blood pressure regulation, and so much more. This study reinforces what we've known for a long time, that real nourishment really makes a difference, and the proper nutrients support fertility, pregnancy, and baby's health. Needed isn't just aiming for adequacy, they're supporting what's possible. No matter where you are along your fertility or pregnancy journey, Needed is what I recommend. Head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% on your first subscription order. Again, head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, now back to the show.
What would you say is unique for couples going through IVF in particular? So I know there's very unique experiences even along the trying to conceive journey, whether it's a pregnancy loss or it's unexplained infertility or it's going through IVF. In particular, IVF, what would you say is something unique that comes up?
I think just how scientific a process that is supposed to be very primal and like emotion-based becomes. Like, we were just kind of joking. I remember for one of our transfers that my husband had like a potential work meeting. And I was like, well, do you think you can like pencil in our conception? Like, do you think you can be there? Like, you know, like things that you wouldn't even think about if you were doing this the old fashioned way. So I think couples need to, and we're honestly still trying to figure this out ourselves, but how can you inject romance, connection, and like that more like just, you know, sexiness back into your relationship? So I think couples really struggle with that. And if you can divorce that from reproduction sometimes, the way we used to, right? When we were younger and just full of hormones, right?
Yeah.
I think couples need to get back to connection and playfulness, because this can get so clinical. And like, technically, like, I don't even need him. I have my embryos in the freezer. Like, he's useless at this point to me. So you know, you have to work on your connection for other purposes.
Yeah, I love that. I know my husband, he injects humor into everything. It's kind of his way of dealing with things. And I remember he had made a comment, and we had been through so much. We both have been through so many therapists and healers and all sorts of, you know, dark night of the soul experiences. And so it was at a place where it didn't it wouldn't trigger me. And we just know each other so well. But he said something because my doctor, he's an Asian man. And he's like, you know, I never really imagine you getting knocked up by an Asian man or something. And I was like, oh, my God, Mike, this is not the time. But it was just very funny. And like I made a joke when I was going in for my second embryo transfer. I was in this gown and I don't even think my doctor caught the joke. So I was like, wow, I just imagined wearing something very different the night that I conceived my children, you know, like just very like different. But that took a long time to get to that place of having that humor, because in the first transfer, I felt like my whole life was crashing down and it was like the worst day of my whole life, or my egg retrieval, not my transfer. But with my husband and I know that we, and I encourage this with my patients too, is if you're going through IVF and you are getting ready to do a transfer, to still have, you know, intimacy that either day before, you know, or whenever it's appropriate that your doctor says you can, to still feel energetically like you had a connection that then brought life forth later, you know, versus being avoidant of each other and not being, you know, connected intimately. I think there's still something super energetic that can happen there, even if you need help.
Yes. I love that. And I think that's why I'm drawn to like your work and other friends. I love the kind of marriage of the naturopathic and the Western. And I know, and in my job, I think therapy, it's art and science together. And I think that's where the magic happens. And so I think it's really helpful too, because I know probably a lot of your audience leans more towards the natural preference of things. And I have touches of that in me too. I'm very Western medicine in some ways, and I'm very woo-woo in other ways. And I think it can just feel so shameful too when you have to resort to something like this. And I know you talk about this because of your background, but just knowing that these things can go so well together and you can find ways to be creative about weaving them together. So I love that suggestion of having some kind of intimacy when you're doing your embryo transfer to keep the energy there.
I love that. What about pregnancy loss? I feel like it's so common, and it might just be more in my space lately, but I just feel like so many people are having pregnancy loss. And as a clinical psychologist and supporting people on this journey, what do you feel like if someone was listening and they've just experienced one, or they know of someone, like what are kind of the first steps? Because I know for some people, they maybe want to fix it or try to figure it out, but really there's like this processing that needs to happen. But like, I don't know. It just feels confusing even for me to know how to support someone from a mental, emotional perspective. Can you speak to that?
The annoying answer is, you know, it really depends person to person. And it's so interesting because in my practice, I have people along the whole spectrum where, you know, it's their world is crashing down around them. And then like, okay, well, this gives us data to work with and let's proceed. Anything in between. So I think first and foremost, and this is how I like to address any kind of loss or negative circumstance in someone's life, is I just like to start by asking them where they are with it. So you experienced pregnancy loss. Just tell me where your head's at. And that can give you a lot of clues into what kind of support they're looking for. If they launch into a more cognitive, cerebral space with it, if they break down in tears, like there's just a lot of data in how people respond to that. And that helps a lot of times when we lead with assumption, like I was talking about before, then we have to kind of correct and backtrack the conversation to get where they need to be. So we can avoid that to begin with a check-in. I think that can be super helpful. That's why also I always ask my clients on our intake, like, what are your spiritual identity? And so I know that already, because some people are really comforted by the fact that, you know, there's some kind of faith component here. Some people like do not want to go that direction. So knowing your audience a little bit. And I think for some people too, just wanting the space to process what we call disenfranchised grief, which is grief that doesn't really have anywhere to go. And it's often most related to future things that we're grieving that aren't going to happen. So that, you know, loss of when you get pregnant, even if you're trying to be as cautious as possible, you can't help it. Your doctor tells you when you're due, like you start thinking about the calendar, you start thinking about, oh, what season is that going to be? And, oh, I'm going to be really pregnant for Halloween. What might I dress up as? You just start imagining this life for yourself. And, oh, my best friend just announced she's pregnant, so our kids will be the same age. And when that doesn't happen, you're grieving all these things that, yes, you never held, but they felt real to you and they felt like something you were heading towards, and that gets taken away. So letting people, giving them space to process what they were anticipating.
Yeah. Oh, that's so beautiful. You're such an amazing support. I have one last question. I know that we've been chatting for a while, but I know I had this experience, and I'm not sure if you did, but I know some people do, which is having challenging pregnancies or postpartums after infertility. What would you say to that? Or what do you have any advice or just, you know, mindset shifts? Or I don't even know, because that was my experience as well, right? Having really hard pregnancies. And you wanted this baby so much and you tried so hard for so long. And then there's just a lot of complicated emotions.
Yes. We might need to do a whole separate episode on this.
Yeah. Maybe we'll like schedule a separate one about all of this.
This is one of the things that I am super passionate about talking about, because I think it gets, again, that shame piece. Like, and I did a presentation on this recently with another mental health group, and the title of the talk was, "But I Wanted This: Reconciling, you know, Expectations and Reality." Just because you struggle to get pregnant and you want it so badly and you pay for it in blood, sweat, and tears doesn't mean that you are immune to the complications of pregnancy, the physicality of pregnancy, the hormonal changes, life stress, all of it. So I think a lot of women feel like their only option is to be happy and grateful and just over the moon while they're pregnant. And pregnancy is no joke. Like, pregnancy is hard. I got really lucky. I had a very smooth pregnancy, but a lot of my friends were pregnant at the same time, not having smooth pregnancies. And then they feel like they can't complain about it. Oh, I shouldn't complain. So one thing I just want to say is it is normal. If you are struggling in pregnancy or postpartum, you're not immune to that, no matter how badly you wanted your baby. So that's just one of the biggest things I hear. But the other piece is that, unfortunately, it reinforces some of those unhinged thoughts that we were talking about earlier, where if your body is struggling at every stage, it just feels like it's confirmation from God, the universe, whoever, saying you're not meant to do this.
Yeah. Oh, I've had those thoughts for sure.
Yeah. And that's not what that means at all. You know, and I remember, so my pregnancy was fairly smooth, but we had severe intrauterine growth restriction. I had to be induced early. I didn't get pregnant naturally. I didn't go into labor naturally. Like, I just, it's just these feelings of just like, I can't do anything right. And it sucks. And so helping people have the space to process that and giving them space where they can be honest. And a lot of women too, especially postpartum, are afraid to voice anything negative because they don't want anyone to like take their baby away from them. That's some real fear. If we say that we're struggling with symptoms, especially for the more severe perinatal mood disorders, like, you know, postpartum OCD or psychosis, we don't want to be open about that because there might be consequences. So make sure that someone has a space where they can be honest.
Yeah, I know. I had thoughts of suicide during my pregnancy. And it's like, I've never had those kind of thoughts ever. But I was so sick. I was like, if this is going to be the, like, you go in these weird places, right? Like, if I'm going to feel like this for the rest of my life, like, I can't do it. You know, these like crazy irrational thoughts. It's like, this isn't going to be forever, but you know, it just feels like it is. And it's like, but I wanted this, and it's complicated. So you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to have you as a guest inside of my membership, Womanhood Wellness, and we should do a whole talk on pregnancy after infertility or loss, and just kind of dive deeper into that, because I think that we need to give it its own time, because I feel like there's a lot to unpack there, and we've already shared so many amazing things. So I am so grateful that you were here to share your wisdom and your knowledge. How can people work with you, find you? Like, what are the things that you are doing in the world?
Yes. The easiest way to get in touch with me is my Instagram. I'm Reproductive Psychologist on Instagram. And my links are all on there, but my therapy website is fluxpsychology.com. You can book an online consultation on my website or on my Instagram page. And I'm licensed in 42 states through SciPact. More meaning by the year. So chances are I'm licensed where you are if you're looking for a therapist, or I'm happy to help you find someone in my network if you're looking for support.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Dr. Andrea. I'm so grateful for your wisdom.
Thank you for having me.
In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.